Hey, what's up, Cub fans? Welcome to episode 75 of Locked On Cubs. I'm your host, Ryan Davis of The Sporting News, The Athletic MLB, Bet Chicago, and CubsInsider.com. And I'm bringing you this kind of short, extra mailbag episode, I guess. I'm just going to give you a couple segments here. First one, I'll look at ahead at the Cubs and the Cleveland Indians coming into town for a two-game set. Then second segment, I've got a couple questions from listeners they sent my way since the Cubs didn't play on Monday and there's no real action to break down. And then finally, I'll go over the NL Central standings and give you what happened in the rest of the division. So the Cubs were off on Monday, but they will play the Cleveland Indians in a two-game set Tuesday and Wednesday this week. This is a continuation of their home-and-home interleague series this year, and they split the first two games in Cleveland back in April. You remember that. Cubs won 10-3 in the first game, then they lost 4-1 in the second game. Fun fact, since the Cubs left Cleveland, only the Atlanta Braves and Washington Nationals have a better record in the National League than the Cubs. Tomorrow's podcast, it should be noted, will be done by someone else currently unspecified. So I'll have one of my guys who steps in and helps me out doing the podcast tomorrow. I'll be heading up to Chicago to do a story for the Sporting News. That's going to be related to the Indians making their first trip back to Wrigley Field since they had the ability to close out the 2016 World Series in Game 5. And I'm sure you all remember that was the game Cubs led 3-2. Aroldis Chapman came in, pitched the final 2 2/3 innings to shut that game out and send it back to Cleveland, where obviously the Cubs won the last two games. So keep an eye out for that story. I'm going to be doing that this week. So I would imagine it'll come out either, you know, let's say Friday or maybe early the next week as well. Tonight's game will be a 6:05 Central Time start with Tyler Chatwood taking on Trevor Bauer. Bauer has been really good so far this year, posting a 2.59 ERA and 9 starts for the Indians. He pitched well against the Cubs when they met earlier this year, pitching in that 4-1 Cleveland victory. But it also should be noted that he was the man on the mound in Game 5 of the World Series when Chris Bryant hit the home run in the fourth inning, starting that 3-run rally that ended in a Cubs victory over the Indians. So a little bit of symmetry there that Bauer will be on the mound against the Cubs back pitching in that game. This one will be broadcast on WGN as well as on ESPN. So now let's go ahead and go to our second segment with the questions from the listeners. All right, here are some questions that I got from you guys that it's just two of them, but I'm going to discuss them and go into a little bit of detail. I thought that these were pretty interesting. Rob Benson emails to ask about specific games that are known for certain players. I think you all probably know when I say the Sandberg game, what that's referring to. Everyone knows that's the game in 1984 when he hit two home runs late against the Cardinals. I think both were off Bruce Sutter. And the Cubs won that game, kind of came back in an unexpected way. There's the Kerry Wood game, of course. Everyone knows that's the 20 strikeout game. But Rob asks, what other games are there? And there are a few examples he brings up that are worth discussing, and then there are a couple more that I came up with that I think are worth discussing. So the first one is one that I just brought up, and I think if you name it just by the player, you know what I'm talking about, and that would be the Chapman game. That is Aroldis Chapman's basically most important game and most important effort in a Cubs uniform, and I think without him in that game, they probably don't win the World Series. I think it probably ends in Game 5 because I think the Indians probably come back on a combination of the other pitchers in the Cubs bullpen. So without Chapman just absolutely dominating the Indians in Game 5 of the World Series, I don't think they hold the World Series trophy. So that would be one, and that's one that Rob brings up in his email, is the Chapman game. Another one that he brings up, it just refers to the Bryant game, and Rob notes in the email that he doesn't think this one should count, and it's because the Bryant game refers to the 3-home-run, 2-double game against the Cincinnati Reds, and he says that it was a meaningless game against the Reds, so it really doesn't count as the Bryant game. And I'll disagree with him on that, because I would argue that the Sandberg game was a meaningless regular season game. I know it feels like it means more because it was against the Cardinals, but both games came in years when the Cubs made the postseason. So the wins were either meaningful or meaningless, depending on how you see it. And if the Cubs had lost that Sandberg game to the Cardinals, it wouldn't have affected anything. They would have still made the postseason. They would have been the one game in the standings didn't mean anything. It wasn't that they won the division by one game or anything like that. So I would say that in the same way, that was a meaningless game. So if you're going to define the Bryant game as meaningless against the Reds, I would say that the Sandberg game is the same. So I definitely count the Bryant game. And I feel like Cubs fans probably know what you're talking about when you say the Bryant game. That was the full house, you know, the three homers, two doubles. And that was something that had never been done in a major league game. So that's one that I do. I came up with three others. The first one, I say, what about the Starlin Castro game? Maybe not everybody knows exactly what you're referring to, but I would think that the Starlin Castro game would be his major league debut when he went to Cincinnati. I think he was 20 years old, maybe 21. Hit a home run in his first plate appearance, and he had six RBI in that game. That's a memorable game. I think even just bringing it up, if you didn't know what I was talking about when I said the Starlin Castro game, when I said his major league debut, you probably went, oh yeah, the home run and the three-run homer in his first at bat, and then he had all the RBI. The next one that I come up with is harder for fans to recognize what you're talking about because he had so many great games, but I refer to the Jake Arrieta game. And when I say that, I mean the wild card game in Pittsburgh. I know the no hitters are the first things that come to mind. And if he hadn't thrown the second no hitter in Cincinnati, it'd be easy to say the Jake Arrieta game is the no hitter in Los Angeles, the one that he had in 2015. That would be a no brainer. But really, outside of the no hitters, his next most dominant game that he threw in a Cubs uniform was that wild card game in Pittsburgh in 2015. And how can you say any game mattered more than that? That was do or die. That was your essential game seven to get you to the postseason. So that was a big game. Arrieta came up huge on the road, had one of his most dominating games of his career. So if I were to say that there is a Jake Arrieta game, I would go with the Pittsburgh wild card game. But I do understand that if you're talking about games that are just instantly recognizable by the name of the player, there is a bit of confusion because those two no-hitters probably come up first. And the last one that I have is the Miguel Montero game. I would think that you guys know which game I'm talking about when I say the Miguel Montero game, but at the same time, I would think also for a player to have a game named after him, those players need to be at least moderate stars on the team, right? And, you know, Starlin Castro, I think, you know, was a moderate star early in his career. He was an all-star with the Cubs, one of the better players on the team for several years. But Miguel Montero never was that. He was, by the time that he had his big moment in the sun, he was, what, a pinch hitter in that game? He was playing part-time, probably your third string catcher on the 2016 team by the end of it. So, if you don't know which one I'm talking about, it's the grand slam in game one of the NLCS. Probably a lot of, if you talk to Cubs fans and ask them for their, you know, top five playoff memories, I would think that one would come up, outside of winning the World Series and winning the NLCS in 2016 against Clayton Kershaw. I feel like that Miguel Montero grand slam is pretty much right up there. So, I would go with a Miguel Montero game as well, but great question. If you guys have specific games that you think players have their name just attached to naturally, go ahead and tweet them at Locked On Cubs or email me at LockedOnCubs@gmail.com, and I will try and get them out there on one of the next upcoming podcasts if you come up with a good one. I'm probably going to butcher this name, but Dan Nancaro brings this question all the way from Australia. He says, which two cities would you like to see MLB expand into with new franchises? And I have two that come right to mind. So this was an easy one for me to answer. The first one, I would love to see baseball go back to Montreal. It's rich in baseball tradition already. They already have a fan base that had a team there. And when treated properly with a real stadium, I think the fans would show up to the ballpark. I would love to see the Expos return to the game. It was a team that I loved watching play when I was a kid. They had some great players on that team. Obviously, for towards the end, it wasn't good. They were mismanaging the team like crazy. They didn't have an owner. The stadium needed a new ballpark, and they didn't have one. So nobody was showing up to the games. It was just a mess. And then they ended up moving out of city. But that's one that I think Jonah Carey, if he were listening to this podcast, I'm sure he doesn't, but if he were listening to this, I think Jonah Carey would give me the big thumbs up and say, yes, Montreal needs the Montreal Expos back. And I am there with you on that. Bring the Expos back. The other team that I would add would be in Las Vegas. And there are a few reasons for this, and one of them is selfish, and the other one I think is logical. The first is the logical part. The stigma of gambling in sports is gone, especially now in 2018 with the recent Supreme Court ruling. But what was once an impossibility is now made realistic. It used to be that pro sports wouldn't even think about going near Las Vegas because of the stigma of sports and gambling. But now the Las Vegas Golden Knights are having all their success in their expansion season, which is one of the biggest stories in sports history, if not the biggest. It's one of the biggest. An expansion team making it all the way to the Stanley Cup final and possibly winning it. That's absurd. And the Oakland Raiders are on their way to Las Vegas in a couple of years. I wrote a story a while back when I was with FanRag Sports where I interviewed the mayor of Las Vegas on this very topic. And she said that in her opinion, it's just a matter of time before Major League Baseball and the NBA are in Las Vegas as well. So that's one of the ones that I would go with. Outside of the logical reason, I have my own selfish reasons for Las Vegas. I really love the city of Las Vegas and that area in general. I love the desert. I love the dry heat. I love the lights and the glamour of the Las Vegas Strip. I also just like the area. There's some really nice areas around there. It's one of the biggest school districts in the country. My wife's a teacher. She had actually been offered a job a couple years ago that she ended up turning down simply because it would have been too quick of a turnaround for us to pack up and move and get out there. But it's an area that we both like and are interested in, and I would like to move out there. And yeah, I don't think it would be all that much of a surprise to listeners to know that it's always been my dream to be a beat writer for the Cubs. But I'm realistic, and I know that there are a lot of barriers to entry for me heading down that road. But with a new team in Las Vegas, I could totally see moving out there and being a writer for either a newspaper or The Athletic or MLB.com for a Las Vegas franchise. I feel like that would be a lot of fun. That would be very natural for me. So selfishly, I would love to see a team in Las Vegas because I feel like that would be a really cool move for me. And I can see it happening. So that's the reason I go with Las Vegas. Thanks a lot for the questions, guys. I appreciate it. Let's go ahead and go to segment three. All right, segment three. Only the Cardinals and the Brewers were in action on Monday, and both of them, unfortunately, won their games. The Brewers beat the Arizona Diamondbacks 4-2. Jace Anderson returned from the disabled list for Milwaukee and tossed six solid innings, allowing just two earned runs. Corey Knebel is also back in action for Milwaukee, and he picked up his second save of the season. The Cardinals jumped all over the Kansas City Royals early, building up a 6-0 lead through the seventh inning. I'm recording this podcast on Monday night, so I'm trusting that the Cardinals hold on to that lead over the final two innings, which is really, honestly, never a guarantee with the Cardinals bullpen, but we're going to go ahead and trust it. Outfielder Tyler O'Neill hit a home run for his third consecutive game for the Cardinals, and I think we can just go ahead and assume that's a Cardinals win. So here are the updated NL Central standings. The Brewers remain in first place at 29-19 on the season. The Cardinals, again assuming that they hang on to that 6-0 lead, move into second place alone at 26-19 and are now 1.5 games back. The idle Cubs, Pirates, and Reds all lost a half game in the standings. Chicago is now 2 games back at 25-19. The Pirates are 2 games back at 26-20. And the Reds are 13 back at 16-32. Thanks again for listening, guys. This has been episode 75 of Locked On Cubs. You can follow me for my work at Ryan Q. Davis. Again, I write for Sporting News, and I'll be in Chicago doing a story on the Indians and Cubs this Wednesday. So you could probably find that either on Friday this week or maybe early Monday or Tuesday next week at the Sporting News. I also write occasionally at the Athletic MLB, hopefully something for them in June. And then starting up in June, I'll be at Bet Chicago, which will be really cool. I'm doing White Sox and Cubs coverage for them, and then my usual once a week at CubsInsider.com. You can also follow the podcast on Twitter at Locked On Cubs, or you can email us any questions or comments at LockedOnCubs@gmail.com. And also be sure, if you use iTunes to listen to this, go ahead and go on, leave us a 5-star review. Even if you don't use iTunes, you can still go on and leave a review, I'm pretty sure. Give us those great reviews and tell us how much you like us. When you do that, we end up in some sort of algorithm that tells people when they look for Cubs podcasts, hey, listen to this one. And the more people listen to us, the easier it is for me to get people to advertise on our podcast. And then the more I could bring you really cool stuff like ticket giveaways and things like that, that I currently cannot afford to do, but with more money, I could afford to do. So it's all scratch my back, I scratch your back kind of thing. So if you like the podcast, help me out with a great review. That would mean a whole bunch to me. Thank you very much, guys. I will talk to you again on Thursday. Someone else will be here, hopefully with a Wednesday podcast for you guys.